On my travels, I've been speaking on the Vishnu Sahasranama, the thousand names of Vishnu, which in at least a thousand ways describe the glories of Vishnu, Krishna, and actually in more than a thousand ways, because each name can be understood in various ways. So you may think it's a lot of names for one person to have, a thousand names. But for God, there's not many at all. So, name 172 is Mahamaya. And those of you who have enough sound, can everyone hear okay? Can you hear back there? Do I need to put this up? Those of you who have studied or are familiar with the philosophy of Krishna consciousness knows that Mahamaya generally refers to the illusory energy that covers everyone in this world. Reality means to know Krishna and our relationship with him. And Mahamaya means that great energy which covers our consciousness so that we think in terms of enjoying this temporary life and not remembering Krishna. So that's a very great power. Maya means power, energy. So the great power that comes from Krishna ultimately to cover our consciousness. Maya also means mercy. So Krishna is greatly merciful. That those who turn toward Krishna, those who desire to love Krishna, he helps them to become free from this great illusion. These names in this series, because this is name 172, so it's in a verse, and in this particular verse the names are analyzed in relation to the pastime of Vishnu of churning the milk ocean. Again, those of you who know. If you don't know, well, it's a bit of a long story to tell just now. But in that pastime, Lord Vishnu appeared in five different forms, and one of them is in the form of Mohini, which is the female manifestation that Krishna manifested to bewilder the demons, those who wanted to illegally usurp the nectar. So she enchanted them all and bewildered them all. How does Krishna give this illusion? How does that happen? Why does that happen? That is mentioned by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. Nahang prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita mudho yang na bijanati loko mama jamavyayam. Krishna is not, although Krishna is everywhere, in everything, outside everything, everything is dependent on Krishna, nothing is separate from Krishna, but still we don't see him. Why is that? How is that? If God is everywhere, why don't we see him anywhere? Why is that? The atheist will say, well, if there's God, show me. As if he has to come and running up and bow down and say, yes, yes, I'm here, please believe in me. He is everywhere, but due to our denying him or not wanting to serve him, therefore he is covered by his illusory energy, by which we think of reality as being separate from him. So he conceals himself or is concealed by his energy, which in this verse is called Yogamaya, his mystical potency, by which that which is real appears to be unreal, and that which is unreal appears to be real. Krishna is reality. Krishna is eternal. We are all eternal. We are all eternal living beings. We never die and we never born. But the body, we all have different bodies. The body is temporary. The body is born, the body dies. But we, not considering this, we think that this life is all important, not considering all of eternity before we were born and all of eternity afterward, and that our existence in this body is a very short time, and we take it to be all important. So this world, it's not exactly unreal. It does exist. We can't say it doesn't exist. But our perception of it is incorrect, because we take it to be, we take our existence, this existence in this body, to be far more important than it is, because the body is temporary. But we are eternal, and Krishna is eternal, and our relationship with Krishna is eternal. That is a relationship of loving service to Krishna. But forgetting that, we try to be happy in this material world, being covered by the illusory energy of Krishna. So this is if we consider that we are eternal living beings by nature, full of happiness, full of knowledge, but that we are struggling in this material world, forgetful of our real existence of bliss, then we can understand that this energy that covers us, by which we consider this unreal existence to be real, how great is that? And that is coming from Krishna. This enchanting or illusory potency. Krishna also enchants the devotees by his, just as the persons who are separated from Krishna, by their desire to be separate from him, just as they are enchanted by this illusory energy by which we think we can be happy in this material world, so also Krishna enchants his devotees. Everything about Krishna is enchanting. His form is very beautiful. Krishna is very beautiful. The sound of his flute is very beautiful. His pastimes are enchanting. Everything about Krishna is enchanting to those who allow their heart's tendency to run toward Krishna. Those who allow themselves to be enchanted by Krishna, those who have faith in Krishna, who let their heart's feelings run toward Krishna. There is a certain class of philosophers who, seeing this world as miserable and full of suffering, they surmise that there is nothing. There is nothing, just this whole world is illusory and there's nothing beyond it. And they don't want to put their faith in any person, God. They think if there's God, he must be cheating us also. Everyone in this world cheated me, so if God is the supreme, he must be the supreme cheater. Well, in one sense that's true, but then Krishna's cheating, if we're cheated, we feel horrible, isn't it? We feel, you feel disgusted. But Krishna, who is known as Hari, he takes away our mind. You can imagine, if someone takes away your money, that's pretty bad. But if he takes away your mind, that's a lot worse, isn't it? But then Krishna, he takes our mind and fills it with love for himself and for all other living beings. So that kind of cheating, that is very welcome. That is not the cheating where one person wants to exploit another. but that is Krishna who enchants us by his beneficial loving sentiment toward us. So one who is enchanted by Krishna, one whose mind is no longer enchanted by the illusory prospect of enjoying this material world, and lets himself be enchanted by Krishna, he will no longer be attracted by this illusory energy of this material world. So the next name, 173. Mahotsaha, which means greatly enthusiastic. Krishna is greatly enthusiastic. He never suffers from depression. God never gets depression. He never has to take some Prozac or some pills like that. He's always enthusiastic. If we see Krishna's pastime, just like you can see here, this painting is like putting your eye to the keyhole and seeing inside is this spiritual world. So Krishna is swinging with his friends, and he does more or less the same kind of thing every day. If we see Krishna's pastimes, he's a cowherd boy, transcendental cowherd boy. You couldn't imagine that, could you? By logic, if you try to understand what is God doing, is he sitting on a cloud forever? Well, he may be also, but mostly he likes to go out with cows. And it's just unimaginable. Why should God do that? Well, because he likes to. He can do whatever he likes, just like some people like to play a saxophone, and some people like to go sailing, and some people like to go snorkeling, and he likes to take out cows. Not exactly cows of this world, but transcendental cows. Everything in the spiritual world is full of bliss. So Krishna goes daily to the forest. He swings with his friends in the forest. He sings with his friends. He plays. He dances. And he goes on doing that again and again and again, daily. How long for? What happens when he grows up? He doesn't grow up. He always stays. He's the original Peter Pan. He never grows old. He never grows old. He's always fresh and beautiful. And he never grows bored. He never thinks, oh, I'm getting bored of all this. Let me go to Boston downtown and go to some party or nightclub. He never thinks like that. He's always fully happy because he's accompanied by loving devotees who are also eternally enthusiastic to serve him. And serve him, how is that? Not exactly yes sir, no sir, salute and all this kind of thing, but in pure loving affection. So Krishna is always fresh, enthusiastic, he never gets bored. He never has negative emotions. He never gets sick. He's always full of great enthusiasm. He's always very enthusiastic to deliver his devotees from the darkness of this material world. In relation to the pastime of churning the milk ocean, we can see that he was so enthusiastic to effect the victory of the demigods. He took five different forms. He personally helped the demigods in pulling the snake Vasuki. When the Mandara mountain, which was used as the pivot for churning, sunk in the ocean, everyone was disappointed. Now everything's finished, but he came up with the solution. In all ways, enthusiasm doesn't just mean to have some rush of adrenaline and jump up in the air. But real enthusiasm is that which is sustained. That's real enthusiasm. You can be enthusiastic one moment and pessimistic the next. But real enthusiasm means that which is sustained. So our enthusiasm for Krishna consciousness should not be just for one day or 2 days, but sustained throughout life, and maybe life after life. That is real enthusiasm. If someone never loses that, but keeps on trying, even if our goal is not very easily reached or very quickly reached, to remain enthusiastic. So perseverance is a concomitant quality of actual enthusiasm. Now, you may say, well, if Vishnu is God, then why does he have to be enthusiastic about any endeavor? Because whatever he wants, he can just do. Why should he have to go on endeavoring like an ordinary person? If he can just wish and then everything is fulfilled. That's true, but if everything just happened just like that, then there'd be no fun. Love is the basic principle between Krishna and his devotees. Love is the ultimate reality. That love is not just some vague love. Just love, love, love who, what? Love Krishna. And love means not just you look at someone and you say, I love you, and that's it, finished. But love means to act for others' benefit, to take difficulty for others. Anyone can say, I love you, but that is tested in adversity. And as it said, when you're down and out, then you really know who your friends are. There are plenty of friends when things are going well, especially when you have lots of money. People who have lots of money tend to have lots of friends. And when the money goes, the friends go too. That means they never had any real friends. So, Krishna, he endeavors to help the demigods and help the devotees. He could just say, okay, everything finished. But then there's no fun. You see, the whole churning the milk ocean, how the demigods had been defeated by the demons, and then the demons, they were always successful in battle because they had this, what's called Mritu Sanjeevani, and this elixir, so that even though when the demons were killed, they were brought back to life again. And so naturally, the demigods got beaten because how can you win a war in such a condition? So then the idea came to churn the ocean, the milk ocean, to bring out the nectar. And then this whole idea came from Vishnu. And then it's a long story. It's quite elaborate. But the whole point is that Vishnu is there. Even when things go wrong, he's always there to help. He always finds a solution. And throughout all of Krishna's pastimes, we see that even in Ram Leela, in the pastimes of Lord Rama, Rama became apparently dejected when his wife Sita was kidnapped. But then again, he took up courage and decided, okay, we're going to find where she is and we're going to get her back. And then he endeavored with great enthusiasm to do that. So, what else? Another meaning, mahotsaha. Utsaha is generally known to be, that word means enthusiasm. And maha, great, so great enthusiasm. So this sahayati. Sahati va sa mahotsaha. So, this word can also, by interpretation of the Sanskrit words, that can mean one who can endure, one who can tolerate great difficulty. There's no difficulty for Krishna. But what would be very difficult for us, or for anyone, is very easy. He supports all the planets very easily, which we can't even imagine doing. Also, apart from physical endurance, there's emotional endurance. What is the most difficult thing to endure in this world? What is the most painful thing? Mahabharata says that far more painful than being wounded by the arrows of an enemy are to be wounded by the harsh words of someone who we love. Someone who we love and we trust who rejects us, that is the most painful thing in the world. Now, Krishna loves everyone, but then so many people are rejecting him. They say, I don't believe you. We don't believe in any God. They don't believe it exists. What could be more painful? If someone calls you bad words, that's painful. But if someone just completely ignores you as if you don't exist, what could be more painful than that? So in this world, everyone is either ignoring Krishna or rejecting Krishna, or even most of them who call themselves theistic, but they do so in a manner which is not that very pleasing to Krishna. Just like, give me this, give me that. Oh God, you are great, we love you. Give me more money, give me a new house, give me this, give me that. What about doing something to actually please him? You can imagine if a child is just simply, in the beginning of life, that's understandable. The child simply takes from the parents, but if they never endeavor to give anything back or express any appreciation or serve the parents, I think that concept is completely absent in America, although it's still there in many cultures throughout the world, how in old age, especially the children who were served by the parents when they were infants, when the parents come to old age, the children are expected to look after the parents, just as the parents looked after the children when they were helpless. So instead, if one simply neglects them and doesn't care for them, or maybe even insults them, it's very painful for the parents. And so we see many old people, they pass their last days in a state of not only physical decline, but also emotional emptiness. And actually you don't see them because they're all locked away in homes where you don't see, you can just forget they exist. And now they want to bring in euthanasia. Just what's the use of these people anyway? They're just useless. So better mercifully kill them. That idea is coming. Not understanding that actually if people have been throughout their life cultivating spiritual knowledge, then in the old age they have got more to offer than they could when they were physically fit. The accumulated wisdom which they can pass on to others is the great contribution in old age. But people who spend their whole life watching the TV and cultivating frivolity, then they simply become physically worn out and mentally, philosophically, nothing to offer. So, still they suffer the pain of rejection. So Krishna is very tolerant, even though everyone in this world is forgetting him. Krishna endures that and with enthusiasm still tries to bring people to him. He doesn't become unenthusiastic. He keeps on trying to bring others to him. He comes himself personally to this world and speaks Bhagavad Gita. He comes as the deity. He manifests himself as the holy name. He sends his devotees. And he's always enthusiastic to wake up those who are in the great illusion of forgetting him. He endures their indifference and offensiveness toward him and always tries to waken them up. The next name is Mahabala, which means one who has got great strength. So this is the basic quality that everyone can understand about God. God means all-powerful. He can do what he likes, he does what he creates everything. He's all-powerful. He's all-powerful not only in strength, but as the enchanter of everyone, his beauty is the most powerful. His powerful is not just by brute force, but by his beauty he conquers, by his pastimes he conquers. Lilayatena bhuvanani jayatya jasram. He constantly performs activities which enchant the hearts of others. So his strength is multifaceted. It's not simply brute strength by which he controls others. But rather Krishna, he doesn't try so much like that. In this world we have the idea that if you are strong, you can do whatever you like. Might makes right. If you don't like someone and they're weaker than you, just slap them. Or if some country, they don't do what you like, just invade them, bomb them. So that's the idea of, in the material sense, most powerful means who has got more strength and can dominate others. So Krishna definitely is the strongest. And Krishna is in control. But he gives us in this world a little independence. He doesn't force us to do what he wants, but rather he coaxes us to do so. He tries to convince us of how we will be best benefited by remembering him, by serving him, by turning to him. So Krishna is, he has got the most strength, beauty, knowledge, fame, renunciation, everything. Everything. All the qualities of Krishna are very powerful, and he enchants those who allow their hearts to open up to him. In relation to the story of Vamanadev, we see that in this world, Indra, the king of heaven, is considered to be the strongest, but Bali Maharaj was stronger than him. Bali conquered Indra. But then Krishna, as Vamana, he also conquered Bali. Now, Vamanadev, the Krishna who became the form of a dwarf, and then the form, the size that covered the whole universe, and then conquered Bali, that's a well-known story from the Srimad Bhagavatam. There's another, we know that Vamana, Krishna in the form of a dwarf, became the gatekeeper at the door of Bali Maharaj in Sutala, in the lower planets. So there's a story there that one time Ravana came around the universe trying to bully everyone and show how he's the most powerful. And he saw outside the gate of Bali Maharaj, he came there and he saw a beautiful earring which had fallen from the ear of Hiranyakashipu and had landed there. And that was Ravana's previous appearance in this world as Hiranyakashipu. Now Ravana bent down to pick up that earring. He didn't see Vamana, because Vamana is just a little tiny boy. But he's the gatekeeper, and he doesn't want Ravana to enter and disturb Bali Maharaj. Ravana had come with the idea of conquering. He wanted to conquer the whole universe, so Bali was king of Sutala. So when Ravana bent down, Vamana, with his little lotus foot, kicked Ravana in the backside and kicked him right to the other side of the universe. He never came back. So he was the doorkeeper protecting Bali Maharaj, and he actually protected him from Ravana. Oh, another part of that, he was able to just slightly pick up the earring, but then his hand got caught under it because it was so heavy there. So he's the most powerful. His strength is in his love, his kindness, his strength of resolve. He was determined along, yes, this comes with enthusiasm. Along with enthusiasm comes the strength of resolve. Enthusiasm without resolve, without determination is useless, practically. Just like you see people, they take up some project, they start to do it, and then they drop it. And what's the use? Everyone gets all enthusiastic, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and then the next day, oh, they just lost all their enthusiasm. So, strength of resolve, strength of mind to carry through different projects. Then, name 175, only 825 to go after this. Mahabuddhi, greatly intelligent. We pray to Lord Vishnu to give me the intelligence, enthusiasm, and perseverance to go through with 826 names, because I still didn't speak on this one. Mahabuddhi, which means greatly intelligent. So all intelligence comes from Krishna. He is most intelligent. The scientists, over generations, they study this world and they discover different things, and they praise a scientist as being, oh, Einstein was so intelligent. A scientist, even the greatest of scientists, can only understand a tiny, 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 tiny little bit of how this universe is functioning. And usually they don't understand it properly or fully anyway, because whenever one scientist comes and they think they got it all worked out, then someone else comes and says, actually, they got it wrong. And it goes on like that, generation after generation. Just like I saw a book recently, probably you've all heard of the book A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. So I just saw a book called A Briefer History of Time by Stephen Hawking, which is a condensed version. And on the dust jacket it says this is an updated edition, which is enhanced by the latest research. That means the brief history of time is out of date. Because they made more research and now they discovered more, which means that what they presented as being scientific knowledge previously wasn't actually correct according to their latest knowledge. And guess what? I can predict the future. I'm a great yogi and I can tell you the future. They'll bring you out another book later which says how the present book is also wrong, because they're not as intelligent as they think they are. But even if they, yes, admittedly, the scientists have discovered many things, and therefore we're able to take advantage of electric lights, amplification, and all this kind of thing. But if we consider in a non-atheistic way or theistic way, that all in this universe and even beyond this universe. After all, this universe is only one tiny little speck. If we know how great is God, then this universe is just one tiny little speck, but it's all set up, maintained, controlled by who? He who has such vast intelligence, we can hardly begin to comprehend it. Atheists, seeing the complexity of this universe, they say, no, there can't be anyone in it's just so complex, no one could have set it up, because we can't imagine anyone being so intelligent. And theists say, oh, it's so complex, who has set it up? We can't imagine how intelligent he is. So it's not that much difference. But it's just a matter of acceptance that there's someone behind it, or someone says there's not anyone behind it. So who has set it up? Who maintains it? Who knows the purpose of that? Who communicates that to us? That is the most intelligent person. Buddhi, intelligence. In this world, intelligence works on the background of knowledge. We require knowledge to knowledge and intelligence, they work together. You have to know something, and then you can imply your intelligence to understand it, to try and work out the problems associated with it. One who is intelligent can acquire more and more knowledge, and we acquire knowledge through sense organs, hearing, but we have to have, because we learn so many things by hearing. But then we have some primary knowledge is by seeing. That's why people say, show me God. Also by touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, and hearing. We hear different sounds. If we hear a sound of pattering on the glass, we may conclude that it sounds like it's raining. But hearing, also that important function, through the medium of language, we hear and we learn so many things by hearing. And reading is an extension of that hearing process. We take knowledge from others, and of course we also may get misled by others. So it's an imperfect process. And having received that knowledge, we process it in our minds via the intelligence, but often we get mixed up and we misunderstand. Krishna's intelligence is on a different level altogether, because he doesn't acquire knowledge and then apply his intelligence to try to understand it all, but he already understands, he already knows everything and understands it, and he's not within this universe, just as we are like ants, little ants, and we're trying to understand what's going on all around us. But Krishna automatically knows all of this. He's not trying to understand it. So if we want to understand this universe and everything that's going on in it and the nature of reality, then the best thing that we can do is to take knowledge and guidance from him, someone who knows and understands. If we try to know and understand with their help, then we can know and understand very easily. And that's the principle on which education works. You go to a university and you take guidance from a professor who's supposed to know and understand the subject and will help us through our to come from the platform of ignorance and to help us to understand. Just like in mathematics, it would be very difficult to even enter the subject or progress in it or understand it unless there's some guidance. For most people, some people, few people, the natural mathematicians. That's also, they're getting the knowledge from previous life, we can understand. But for most people to, if you're not trained and you see a page full of equations with all the few numbers here and there and some Greek symbols and you don't know what does it mean? You need someone to guide you. So to guide us through the great illusion, the Mahamaya that is this material world, if we take guidance from that person who already knows everything, whose knowledge is perfect, whose understanding is perfect, then we can also, according to our level, understand everything. We cannot understand everything as perfectly and completely as God does, but according to our capacity, being very, very tiny little beings, as much as He inspires our intelligence, we can understand. So even without any mundane ears, eyes, nose, skin, or tongue, He knows and understands everything. So when we say that Krishna is most intelligent, we should understand that doesn't mean that He's like an Einstein or Hawking or any such person, but His intelligence is in a completely different category. It's so vast that we can hardly begin to understand. But for us, the highest level of our intelligence will be to understand that His intelligence is far, far more than ours, and that ours is always, whatever we know and understand is simply dependent on His inspiring us and allowing us to know and understand. And when we understand that we can never even approach His level of knowledge and understanding, that is the perfection of our intelligence. So we shouldn't be overly proud and think we know so much. The whole functioning of this universe, that for one who has got the intelligence to accept that, they can see the hand of God in that. The atheist can't see God anywhere, but the theist sees Him everywhere and in everything. So, what else is here in the commentary? Mind, intelligence, false ego. The intelligence is the the mind is there. The mind is the business of the, or the function of the mind is to accept and reject. We perceive various sensual stimuli and we accept, oh, this is very nice, that is not nice. Something, I would like to have that, or we try to avoid something else. This should be processed by the intelligence. So, just for instance, we may see there is some very nice food, I would like to eat that. But then we think, well, I already just ate too much, and if I eat more, it may taste nice, and for 1 second I'll have a nice sensation on my tongue, but then afterward I'll get indigestion. So the intelligence should control the impulses of the mind just to take things without considering the future consequences. That is the animalistic platform. Of course, even the animals, they generally don't overeat. But the intelligence, by the intelligence, one should regulate one's life and come to a higher platform. So that intelligence is given by Krishna. Okay, so Hare Krishna. Any question about this, please?
Mahamaya is an illusory energy. But at the same time, I believe consciousness itself is energy. So how these things are interrelated?
There are different energy. The question is that Mahamaya is an energy. Consciousness is also an energy. How are they related? Well, there's the consciousness is the symptom of the living being. So you have consciousness, I have consciousness. At the present time, when we say I have consciousness or you have consciousness, that is, it's not like you have, what's that called, an iPad? This thing? Yeah. So it's not like having an iPad which you can acquire or throw away. It is intrinsic to our very existence. We are called jiva, the soul is called jiva, which means living, and the very symptom, the indispensable symptom of life is consciousness. That is the difference between that between life and matter. This body is made of chemicals, this microphone stand is made of chemicals, but because there's jiva, the soul, connected with this body, therefore there is life. The life, the basic symptom of life is consciousness. When our consciousness is covered by the illusion by which we think, I am this body, that is called Mahamaya, the great energy that deludes our consciousness. When our consciousness is free from that covering, then we know, I am an eternal part and parcel of Krishna, meant to serve Krishna, meant for Krishna's pleasure. So this energy works on the consciousness. Yeah, okay. So the arati is at 6 o'clock, I believe, yeah. So you'd like to introduce these books? Want to do that? Yeah. Okay, take the mic. Hare Krishna. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna, who introduced us to all these topics.